Hello, Fight Insight fans, viewers, and listeners. I'm the Filipino podcasting machine, Princey D, and with me, as always, the man formerly known as Timbo Slice, Timmy B. Before we start, please take a moment to follow and subscribe to us on YouTube or wherever you get your pods and leave five-star reviews. If you'd like to support the show, check out middaysquares.com and use code FIGHTINSIGHT15 to save 15% on your first order. On today's episode, we speak to a man polarizing the world with self-defense techniques, discuss all things Jake Paul, Errol versus Dennis, and a whole lot more. Tim, hit it!
Yeah, it's Timmy B, Princey D, Fight Insight. Yeah, that's right.
Our guest today is an Army veteran and the founder and operator of the Detroit Threat Management Center and Detroit Urban Survival Training, providing preventative threat management services, education, facilitation, and community service in and around the city of Detroit. His videos on self-defense techniques have captured the attention of everybody on the planet. However, with fame comes detractors and doubters, which is why he's also become the focus of meme makers, especially in the MMA community. So, in typical Fight Insight fashion, we've reached out and asked if he could come on today to explain who he really is, what he does, and answer some tough questions as posed by you. And we were both shocked and thrilled, Prince, that he agreed. This is our greatest moment of all time. Joining us today from Detroit, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the podcast,
Commander Dale Brown.
Oh my goodness. Dale, how are you today, sir?
Commander Brown.
Commander Brown. Yes. Oh my goodness.
I am good to go.
Look at that. Dale, watch this.
Yes.
I got it.
I've been practicing.
I've been practicing my eyebrow, Dale, just for you. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for showing up, Dale. And before we get into it, I do want to acknowledge the YouTube award that you have in the background. You just posted about this. Can you explain to the viewers and listeners what that is?
There are two awards. One's for 600,000 subscribers, and the other one's for 1 million subscribers. So that was within about 2 months of actually focusing on YouTube. So we're not on TikTok. We are on Instagram, and we are on YouTube, and the YouTube is just blew up, just grew. It's continuing to grow every day.
It is crazy. Dale, like I said, you are literally everywhere. I mean, you can't flip on social media without seeing your photo, some sort of video that you've released, a meme, something that's got you in it. I mean, it is crazy.
It's amazing. It's crazy. Now, I am ubiquitous.
Dale, the first question I have to ask you, because, you know, when we told people that you're coming on, the question everybody wants to know, are you for real?
Oh, yes. I am definitely for real. And so 100%, 150% real.
And what you teach and what you're putting out there, I know that people play with your videos and they edit them and do all that, but you are real. Can you explain, you know, who is Dale Brown and what is the company that you represent?
So I started teaching self-defense, a system I created. The idea was I took different martial arts, I blended them together to form my own martial art, my own what I call survival system. And the idea was that we needed law with our training. So I took a lot of different martial arts classes in schools and visited different schools growing up and as an adult as well. And after becoming a private investigator, I understood law a lot more and how law applies. And so here I am going through all these martial arts classes. One of my favorite instructors was a SWAT team commander who was instructor of Kyokushinkai. It's my favorite art. And we never discussed law, how it applies to the use of force. There was no use of force law, you know, related to touching people and elbow strikes and kicking people and none of that. We talked about everything except the law. And as I found out more about the law and I saw what happens to people that defend themselves without understanding the law, I had a new understanding of what we all need to know. And that is we need to understand whether we're using a firearm, which I've been a firearms instructor for the NRA for 20 years, approximately. And before that, I was still teaching before I was an NRA instructor, but I couldn't believe we don't know the law and then no one's emphasizing the law. And now you can see kids are getting prosecuted in school at a young age for fighting. And that's with no training. And so imagine all of a sudden you find out as an adult or as a kid that the law applies to everything you say and do. You can't just say whatever you want. You can't do whatever you want. But no one's going to teach you that till your lawyer is there being paid and you're in trouble. Now you get to learn what the law says. Well, I thought, why wouldn't you have this? Why don't we as civilians have this training right now? A legal system for how to defend ourselves. So I blended together tactics from many different martial arts. And then I blended together with baton, knife, pistol, shotgun, rifle training. But from a civilian perspective, how could we legally use these weapons? How could we legally defend ourselves standing up on the ground, you know, armed or unarmed? But the law would have to dictate our course of action, not our emotions. So I created a threat management continuum. Like the police have what's called a force continuum. And civilians just have either a good lawyer or a bad lawyer. And if you have a bad lawyer, you know, things don't go well for you. If you have a talented lawyer, you could have done all kinds of things and you're still going to be fine. In other words, if you have a lot of money for that good lawyer. Well, I thought, why don't we all just have the knowledge we need to legally defend ourselves and have a system that corresponds? So if I'm going to touch someone, I know legally when I should and should not do that. I also know the legal consequences, both civil and criminal law. So in the United States, if you hit someone and you break their jaw and they hit you first, or they're the assailant, you can still be sued civilly. I don't know if it's like that in Canada, but the criminals often sue the victims. You can actually have to pay for the jaw of the person who attacked you.
Down
to break jaws?
So what is not to get too much into it, but then what is it that you teach that would prevent someone from being in that kind of predicament?
Well, legally, you would understand that ahead of time, that I might have to pay for this person's jaw. Now, the argument was over $10 or $100. And you realize that if you fight, you're now going to have to pay a bunch more money to an attorney. So now that you have this legal understanding, you're now going to make a decision. Is it worth it for me to go to jail? Is it worth me to have to pay the fines or pay lawsuits to this guy or a female? Is this going to be worth it to me? But they tell you before you get locked up. They tell you before you have to post bail. They tell you before you have to hire a lawyer and go to court. And all this is in your training. Imagine day one. Yes, we can use wrist releases. And this, if it's a minor, you need to know this. It doesn't matter if the minor is 6'8" and you're 5'8" or 4'8".
Right.
If you're over 18 in the United States, you better not touch that kid. You can hold him, but you better not hit him. And if they hit you first, it's a kid who's hitting you. So they don't really have like a special, you could attack a minor under these conditions. So you could restrain a minor, right? So imagine not knowing that law. Now you're striking this minor. There's people witnessing that. And every time you hit that minor, that is a serious crime. Now, if you knew you could restrain them, right? You could use jiu-jitsu. You could use high school, college wrestling and use that to hold the kid. Now you can't get charged with the crime because you're restraining the child who's happens to be twice your size.
But where are you teaching this to people? You're teaching this at your center? Like you put on classes?
When I started in 1995, I was teaching in parks. I had no money. So I started teaching in parks and in Detroit in the inner city. I was teaching at the YMCA. And so I would get judo people would come by and all kinds of martial artists would come by. And then when I was teaching in the parks, because I had no money, I would get random people off the street that would come up and say, hey, let me see if I can stab you. Let's see if I can shoot you. I don't think that's going to work. And they used to come off the street and just, you know, challenge me right there. It was very fun. I enjoyed it. But it also made my training better. Because now I got a guy who doesn't know anything about martial arts, doesn't know anything about angles of attack. He's just going to come in and try to sneak stab you or try to sneak shoot you. And it really helped. It actually did help that way, with training, with changing my training systems, right? But we had a chance to actually see the difference between striking people out of your weight class and in your weight class, because we're sparring outside with boots on in Michigan. It's cold. It's snow here. You know, we trained year round. So, you know, I was 24, 25. So you know, it didn't matter. You know, you break some bones, it's okay because I'm 25, doesn't matter.
they heal like no problem. It's fine.
Right, right. I was like, people say to me, what's wrong with you? I was like, bandaged up. I'm limping around. I'm like, I teach this system, and we kick each other with boots on, and we wear hockey helmets with full face. We kick the shit out of each other. There's a weight class. We're like 350-pound guy. And I'm 180 pounds. And I'll kick him in the head. He kicks me in the head. And, you know, we literally kick full power with boots on. And that made a huge difference. Of course, you know, you're not impacting eyeballs and throats like you would in real life. But at least you got the chance to see the real feel of a boot to the head with a hockey helmet on, which is lot different. But that's back in my fight days, my fight mindset. But what really changed me was there was a girl here in Detroit that was on a bridge with her daughter. She got caught in traffic. These men yanked her out of her car, yanked her, pulled her clothes off of her, giant men, football players. And right in front of her daughter, teenage daughter, they pulled her clothes off of her, and they had a crowbar, and they were going to hit her with the crowbar. The crowd started cheering. And the girl, the mother, jumped off the bridge to get away from these three men. They were literally stripping her clothes off right there on the bridge in front of a crowd of, you know, 50 to 100 people. And I thought, that is the worst story I could ever imagine. I can imagine that scene. I'm from Ann Arbor, Michigan, where there's University of Michigan's there. I never even heard of something like this in our country, let alone I would have never saw this growing up, right? Or even heard of anything like this. So I really thought it was a lie at first. I didn't think it was true. And then as I found out it was true, I was horrified, because what I thought was, if I was on that bridge, I could stop that event. That horrible event would never have happened. That's number one. Number two, if I would have trained someone, anyone I could have trained could have been on that bridge that could save that woman in front of her daughter. And her daughter would not have seen her mother get thrown off a bridge, jump off a bridge rather, and die. And so that was the impetus for me to switch my focus from a business to a community service. I then thought, this is my purpose of being here. It's not really about trying to teach class as much as about helping people. So I ended up on the east side. I went to the east side of Detroit. I was downtown. I went to the east side, where it's extremely known to be extremely violent. And I moved into a neighborhood that was on one side middle class, maybe lower middle class, where I lived on the big street, which is East Jefferson. And then all behind me was 10 buildings, which you would call at-risk, extreme at-risk neighborhood. 400 dwellings, 10 buildings, bunch of families and people suffering. And I thought, this is where I should be teaching people to defend themselves. That's my first thought. I thought, you know, families really need it. I need to teach them. Let me just, you know, it doesn't matter if they're poor, it doesn't matter if they don't have any money. Here's what we need to do. We need to focus on where families need training. And then I found out that they needed more than training. They needed protection. As I was calling the police every day, all day, I called 911 so much for home invasions and murders that they knew my name. So I would call 911 at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 1 o'clock in the morning. No matter when I called so much that the 911 operators knew my name. First name, just for my voice. And, I couldn't accept the fact that I live in the United States around the corner from where people are being daily home invaded. And there's a murder every month in this one square block. And so I went to the building owner, who was a very wealthy man. And I said to him, you know, you own most of these buildings, as in almost all of them. And I said, listen, you know, we can make it safer for the families. What we could do is we could put, you know, better lighting up, better doors. And he was like, oh, yeah, I'm not interested in none of that. He said, I haven't made any money since the 60s. So I'm not going to do anything for these people. And it's a good thing you want to help your people, though. Good luck with that. I was like, my people? I was like, well, sir, first of all, there's lots of different kinds of people who live here, number one. And number two, I have nothing in common with these people here except that we should all look at each other as human beings. Yeah. And we should say, I wouldn't want anyone to live like this. And it doesn't matter who they are. And they used to call this area Crack Alley. When I say they, I mean the police and the people referred to this area as Crack Alley. Now, in there are 90% families, 10% violent criminals. So the majority of people are just regular people. There's families. So it's not like, you know, you watch these television shows, they're like, oh, it's dystopia. There's always gangs everywhere. Okay, there are gangs, but guess what there is in between the gangs? Just a bunch of families. They need help. And so yeah. I wanted to trade them. And then I found out that's not going to be helpful unto itself. I have to do a lot more than that. So I created an idea for the rich man to determine, you know, if he can allow me the legal right to protect his buildings by hiring me a security. And he said, absolutely not.
Yeah.
I was like, wow. He was like, yo, no, I'm not interested in doing anything for these people. I said, they're paying you. People are here that are alive. And every month people are being home invaded every day. And every month you have a murder. He's like, yeah, no, and I can't afford to do anything because I'm not making any money. So I had to go back to thinking about, you know, what is it that would motivate this rich man to give a damn about what I'm talking about? Because obviously he doesn't care about the people. So I guess I speak a better language. So I went to him, I said, listen, give me 6 months. Give me a free facility so I can make it into a school. So I have an indoor facility. So I don't have to teach in parks. But give me this. It was like a tax office or something, like 500 square feet. That was that. I said, give me that and I'll make it into a school. I'll train people from the neighborhood. And then I will get volunteers from the neighborhood. Give me a free apartment in each building. And then I will train them in exchange for their free apartment because I don't have any money. And give me $2,000 a month for expenditures and for fees. And I said, also give me a free apartment because I'm about to be homeless myself. And he agreed to it. He said, you know what? I don't believe you can do anything that the police department can't do. It doesn't make any sense. I don't understand what you're thinking. What are you thinking? Why do you think you could do something the police department couldn't do for me in the past 25 years I've owned these buildings? And I thought about it for a minute and I said, I really don't know what I can do. I don't know. I'm going to try. So I was an airborne paratrooper. When I got out of the Army, I became a private investigator. While I was in the Army, what happened to me mentally was I lost my fear of anything, really. So I learned to overcome fear of heights, and I'm scared of heights, so I don't like to just go do it as a daredevil, go do things like hang off of buildings or something. But I jumped out of airplanes and helicopters because I gave my word that I would do that. I would follow through. And I didn't know I was going to do it until I actually made the jumps at jump school. Literally the day of my first jump, I still wasn't sure I was going to actually go. So it wasn't until I actually went that I then knew that I could believe in myself and follow through with my word. And so I'm jumping out of a perfectly good working aircraft for no reason other than my word. I don't have to jump out. Yeah. It's not coming out of the sky. I'm deciding to do this. That's you going into a death related situation. You could actually die doing this. And I did it. So once I did it, it changed me mentally. So I lost fear of the things that can kill you in general. So for me, it was transformative psychologically in that I lost my ability to be scared of challenge, life and death challenge. So when I looked at this situation with these families suffering, I thought, what if I was a kid here? What if I grew up here? What if my mom was here? What if my mom wasn't a doctor in the military? What if, I didn't have that kind of family? What if I was here as a little kid? And what they were doing, these gangs were disrespecting the mothers, spitting on them, attacking them. That's on a normal day. Just coming home with your mom, imagine being a little kid. And these are stories I was actually experiencing. I saw these things. I saw the aftermath. And then I started interfering with them. So I convinced the building owner to give me the legal right to enforce rules in his buildings using my volunteers in the neighborhood, which I had none at the moment. I had a dog and a rifle. That's all I had, and an idea. And so I just would rather die personally than know that I sat there while families were suffering around the corner from me. So that's the transition for me. And then once I started helping the community, there was a disconnect as well. I couldn't get a lot of volunteers, number one, because a lot of volunteers knew you could die.
Yeah, well, they wouldn't want to put themselves in that situation, right? Yeah. Like now,
yes. And I watch a lot of TV, and I'm a suburban person, right? So in the suburbs, you watch TV, you see movies where you win, like Standing Tall, and you know, the one with Rock in it, and then the other ones, right?
Yeah,
I saw the original ones.
Yeah. So Walking Tall.
You
can actually
go out and make change. You just go out there and you change it by your will and your fortitude. And I didn't know about death. And I didn't know about death because I'm from the suburbs. These inner city kids, they all knew dead people. So to be fair, I didn't know about death. I didn't really believe in it anyway. And as an airborne paratrooper, I lost my fear of it in the first place. So these other people, one of the things I found out is inner city people, they experienced death as children. They saw things, they saw neglect. There's nothing to protect them from people that want to kill them. So I didn't know that. I watched TV. I thought all you did is just call 911 and someone comes there to protect you. That's not true. There's no one. What the police can do is enforce laws. And that's enforcing laws means after you've been raped, robbed, or killed, they can look for the guilty party and possibly catch them. That's pretty good for enforcing laws. Now, sometimes police can actually be there ahead of time, which is great. And they do. And that's heroic. And they stop things. But it's unfair to actually expect that. That's not realistic for people to say, well, you know, I wish the cops would just be there during my time of need when someone wants to kill me. That's unrealistic. But, you know, it's great when it does happen. And so what I did was I still believe that, you know, if you just coordinate, you just make your calls, you make police reports, you build the case. And this is from private investigator days. I thought I was going to be like a liaison with the citizens. So I was going to teach them self-defense, right? And I'm going to teach them how to coordinate with police, how to communicate with police, how to articulate the situation properly so police can enforce the laws. And that's not exactly accurate. That's not how it works. And the people thought I was crazy because they were like, where are you from? You must not know how this works. And I was like, no, you're not from the right place. You people that won't work with the police are the problem. And then I found out that's just not true. And that's just that in an urban situation, there is a higher level of focus on prosecution than there is protection. So what I did was created, instead of complaining about the police or complaining about whatever's going on with people, I said, you know what? I'm going to create this group. That's what I did. So I got volunteers. I got 10 buildings in one square block, basically. I got volunteers in the buildings, and we used the volunteers to protect the building. And whenever there's a problem, we would all come together to protect each other. So now I've got 10 people to come help each other. And I got Nextels from one of the clients to buy the Nextels. So you could press a button, we'd all hear each other at the same time and come over to help each other. And as a result, we were able to stop the violence. The home invasions and murders stopped. I caught a set of home invaders within the first month, and all the murders stopped immediately. There was no more murders from that day we started. So even though the building owner did not agree with my philanthropic, altruistic view, he did agree he likes profit. So somehow, when there's no rape, robbery, and murder in your buildings, the people don't move out. So as a result, I made rich people richer. So then they said, okay, whatever you're doing, I don't care what this is, but it's working. I don't have 30% occupancy. I now have 90% occupancy. Then they had a waiting list. And the other businesses in the area had more customers. The police had less 911 calls. So I got notified by the police department, the precinct close to us, that the police commander was extremely happy because 911 calls went from 300 a month plus to 30, down to 30 a month, which was me. We always call police for every single situation.
Right.
And the reason why we call police for every situation is because legally in the United States, you need to be able to prove that you sought legal intervention. Otherwise, you're called a vigilante, or you can be called a usurping authority or any number of things. But if you call 911 first and then you had to choke someone out, for example, then that's called situational exigency. So due to exigent circumstances, a person was coming to attack someone, then I had to interfere in that attack, and the police couldn't quite be there yet. So during that process, this individual had to be given a nap.
And so, Dale, I mean, this story is incredible, and someone's going to turn this into a movie one day, right? Because this is your beginning. This is where you began. But now, let's fast forward to where you are now. Like, what are you doing in the community now? Because I started in the intro saying that you do a bunch of work in and around the Detroit area. And when I was speaking to your wife before, who also works with you, she was saying that you guys have a very rich history now and some very good statistics. So can you share with people what it is that you do now and what you're proud of, most proud of?
And Dale, actually, I wanted to say, like, why didn't you explain any of these stats in your TikTok videos?
We did. No one likes those.
No, that's not going to grab the views.
The entire TikTok thing, I started, like, you know, doing, showing some moves. And I saw the feedback from people and I was like, oh, you know what? Oh, I'm sorry, social media people. I'm not social media savvy, right? I see you guys don't know. So let me upload the story of where we came from and give you ways of proving it by going online and Google searching our name.
Yeah.
So you can see actual media that actually tells stories about what we have done. So you can actually see it, not from my perspective, but from other witnesses, right?
Yeah.
And I thought that was it, right? Like, I tell you the story, learn my version. Now go do your research. And a lot of people did. Honestly, a lot of people did. Once they did that, they were like, wow, this is an amazing organization. I had no idea. Even later, they came in. Like, this is what's great about social media in a positive, negative sense. So thousands of people, like, I want to say probably in a week, thousands of them are leaving comments that say, oh, my God, I came here to hate and troll. But I did some research. I checked you guys out. You guys are awesome. This is a great technique, great organization. But they came in under negative circumstances, like someone was making fun or something, which is fine. Yeah. I don't care how they get here, as long as they get here, because what's important is this knowledge can save lives. This knowledge can make you not do something you shouldn't do legally, which destroys your life. This could also help you save a life physically. You physically will understand the science that we had to use to survive. So our 26 years, none of us are dead. That's very difficult. We are not guarding. We are protecting. And that means that you can call us and we physically go out and keep you alive. So now I went from a dog and a rifle to over 100 people working for me per day in about a year and a half with no plan. That was not my plan. My plan was to help the community I lived in. I did not know it was going to grow and keep growing. And we're going to stop the robberies at a grocery store. They were attacking the senior citizens. I didn't know that then. I didn't know anything about gangs in Detroit attacking nightclubs and attacking the people and it being a form of organized crime. I did not know anything about that. I didn't know that Canadians would be willing to come across the border before 9/11. And 20 of them would come per day and be on time, by the way. The Canadians were on time to work 99.99% before the Americans. They lived around the corner in the United States from the training center. The Canadians would come from across the border and be on time.
Yeah.
And by the way, they also fought at the drop of a dime. If it was time to fight, the Canadians would just fight. There's no talking. There's no like, let's go back and forth, talk about each other's mothers for a little while. Nope. Canadians were just like, oh, I'm sorry. Looks like you're swinging.
Oh, so you're hiring most of our hockey players then. That's what you're doing, Dale?
I think it was the guys that weren't allowed to be hockey players.
The goons.
The guys that were like, you just fight. We're not going to even have you on the team. Some of the guys were not allowed to go on bars. There's a guy named Alpha 2, 6'9", giant Viking from Canada. He was one of our greatest guys ever. This guy got more fight time in the United States than anyone. He was smashing people. And you know what's funny? The Canadians wouldn't let him in any bars. He was literally barred from all bars in Windsor.
I think he's
top of Canada now.
Yeah.
So I'm not gonna say his real name, but
so Dale, okay. So you've got 25 years of protecting people, nobody 26. Dead, 26 years. The services that you put out, I've seen where you say that you welcome people to come to your facility and they can test out the techniques themselves. Is that true?
Yeah, they have to, yeah. Yeah, that's what we do here. So this is a school that's based on real life, right? So if you come here and I tell you I'm going to disarm a gun, first thing you say is, I don't think that's possible. So you're not going to go to work for a person or even continue to train with a person if you don't believe what they're saying is true and they can prove it to you. Now, I don't know. Other people might get a pass. For me, guys off the street that I was training and people that came to me, the police officers, especially police officers, military, at least half my staff, probably more like 75% of staff now, has been prior service, combat arms. So these guys are not going to go to work for me, and they're not going to go out here, put themselves at risk if the training did not work 100%.
Right.
100%. It needs to work 100% in training. It's not going to work 100% in this field, right? But it's going to work 100% in training. Otherwise, they're not going to believe you. And if they don't believe you, they're not going to go to work. So you can't. I don't work for the government. This is not a government organization. We're a private sector. That means nobody has to work here. That means nobody has to hire me. So the only reason that I'm successful is because I create the results that are successful. It's not, that's nothing else. That's what I love about the free markets. Remember about the free market means you can be fired anytime. So right. If I'm not effective, there's nothing that can save me from termination. And there's no way to get money from not being successful in the area of protective service. So in my organization, performance is everything. So we don't care about money more than performance. So mission is always more important than money, because the money is a byproduct of doing great protection. So when you protect people, when you're alive, when your people are alive, when the people you protect are alive, then you have a greater quality of life. But you can't do anything if you fail to protect. There's no way if we fail to protect that I can get another client and go, oh, you know, we didn't protect that client. They're dead. But we learned a lot. We'll do better on with we protect you, sir, ma'am. You can hire us. Yeah, no, there's people died in that community. But you know what? We're not there anymore. We want to work for your community, and right. We won't let the same thing happen to you. That's not going to happen. If we failed to protect people in the communities, we would not be in the communities. So
No, exactly. Now, are you okay? So we went to the fans, and Dale, in researching, like you said, and I really appreciate what you said, because I think when people see you and they don't trust you, they look at the memes, they think it's a joke. But if you start to do the research as I did, you started to see like, no, this is real. This is like, he's doing good. He's doing good in the community. Now, I started getting into fights, as I do, Dale, all over the place on YouTube, because I started to stick up for you. Mm-hmm. And I was doing it because I'm like, no, I've started to do the research. This guy's legit. And people were bashing at me. So I want to bring up some of the things that they said and have you just respond to them. Okay. So the first thing that someone said is the tactics that Dale shows only work in certain scenarios. They would not work in real life. How do you respond to that?
So everything we teach, every single thing we teach, right, is from something in real life. So I don't have, there's no kata. There's no, I got rid of that. We don't have that in our organization. So what I did was I took from real life situations as we fought gangs. So where we went from the east side of Detroit was dealing with gangs all over Detroit, Ohio, and we worked in Canada. Wait, I don't know if I can say worked. We volunteered in Canada.
All right.
Volunteered. Okay. No money. There was no money.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is you can't go to Canada to, some of you remember this, some places we were at, one was called Sports Weekend. And guess what? Canadians have guns. Can I just tell you that? Can I just tell you Canadians have guns?
All right.
I don't know what they're... whoever's thinking Canadians don't have guns, if you were with us at Sports Weekend in Windsor, you would see bullet holes in the windows. And that's not from the Americans, not from us.
Yeah.
By the way, okay. Most of the guys I sent to Sports Weekend were all Canadians.
Okay.
I did not know the Sports Weekend was also a lot of Jamaicans. Someone should have told me.
All right.
Not one person told me it was Jamaicans.
So, but the
Jamaicans have guns. I just want to let you know that.
So what you're saying though is that what you're teaching obviously is meant for certain situations, but it's scenarios that have occurred in real life.
Oh yeah, and yeah. Everything happened to either ourselves or police officers. So a lot of things I'm teaching also deal with police officers, things that I saw happen to them, things that police officers share with me that happened to them. But most of it is what we did and what we had to do in order to correct some kind of behavioral anomaly, some type of violence. And so what I did was I broke it down to very small segments. So you have the ability to put it into your actual everyday life. And what we emphasize, how not to hurt people. I can show you 100 ways to crush someone's eyes and destroy their throat. But I'd like to show you a lot of ways to not injure people. Because who are you mostly involved with conflict? It's your family. It's your friends, it's your neighbors, it's your colleagues at work. You need a way to solve physical altercations without hurting people. So I'm showing you how we did it. Because if you don't do that in the United States, you are definitely going to go not just to court, but you're going to go to prison for using violence consistently. It's just, there's no way around it. Eventually, it's going to catch up. If you keep using ultra violence, lots of violence constantly, it just keeps growing. So you're not gonna create more peace from more violence. So I had to learn that the hard way. And what I did was I changed my way of thinking. I used to believe in extreme violence. So imagine we trained about 3 to 4 hours a day, 7 days a week. And back then it wasn't a lot of talking. So it was all elbows, shakedowns, chokeouts, and our standing chokes put 99% of everyone out on contact. We would choke out, there's no way to even know how many, but we'd be choking people all day. We would have constant people unconscious in front of nightclubs. We were known for that. And eventually it stopped all the crime and all the violence at the nightclubs. Yeah. So the gang members switched straight to shooting. And so then we had to do, we had already developed countermeasures for shootings though. So we were steps ahead for that as well. So the important thing to remember is that everything we're teaching came from real life application and need. It was a necessity. So I didn't come up with an idea for what do if someone blocks you with your arm. That's what actually happened. And I had to have a way to empower my team members and police officers that trained here and police officers that worked here and still work here, a way for them to create the best outcome based on their objective. Okay. Right. So it's not just doing moves. So remember, in martial arts, traditionally we're shown a lot of options, right? We get to make it up as we go. Like, you know what? I feel like doing this to you. Okay, but what if there are laws? And what if you want to use the law to dictate what you're supposed to do? Or at least affect your decision making. Right, so that's what I did, was made sure that you're processing it in a legal format.
Okay.
So when you're doing MMA, when you're doing boxing, you're processing. I know a lot of guys that are training in a lot of different arts, they compete in different sports. They don't get, you know, sometimes they get confused, but normally they don't. They can stay inside the genre. I'm doing MMA right now. I can't do this kind of movement. Your brain's already set up for that, right?
Yeah.
But there's no law. It's just these are rules in a sport. I know I can't kick you in the head when you're down, right? Well, okay. We need to know the same kind of things for our law as it relates to application of force. So you also need to know how to talk to police. What do you say to police when you're covered in blood? What do you say to police when the other people are saying what they're saying? And what they're saying is that you victimized them. How do you explain this to the police? What's your voice inflection, facial expression? What do you say to the police? What's articulated on the report? If you don't know any of that, it won't matter if you're really good at fighting, because you're going to be in a cage somewhere, not getting paid, but sitting there with men for long periods of time, simply because you used the force, that a level of force that police did not feel was appropriate when they got there.
Right.
You couldn't articulate it properly. You weren't able to explain it in a way that the officer documented in such a way that things good happen for you later. And that's what we teach. So it's all part of your system here. And then later, Dale, I learned psychology.
So Dale, what about the fact that people will say you can't learn? I got this a lot. I got people saying you can't learn self-defense in a 10-second video.
Okay. Well,
people are critiquing, saying, oh, you shouldn't be showing these techniques because people aren't going to be able to learn it and it's going to put them in danger. I mean, that's not your intent, right?
Well, that's ignorant, isn't it? So I mean, people defend themselves every day.
Right.
Without my help, there's people disarming guns, disarming knives every day. There are people beating down criminals every day and winning. Every day, without my help, without my videos, people have been winning.
Okay. Yeah.
So let's be clear. They don't need my videos to win. What I'm doing is giving you better options so you're not making a primal decision.
Right.
There's men, women, and children. They're going to survive a violent criminal today in every country, and they're going to do it without my training. What I offer is a better way so that, number one, if you don't have to use violence, you could find another way, right? A better way without violence. But number two, if you had to be physically in an altercation, especially with a weapon, there's attributes of that weapon you should know that will increase your survivability. Right. And there's other ones that will decrease it. So you need to understand, for example, human reaction time and biomechanics, the things that you don't normally get explained that way in any self-defense class, because it's anecdotal. It's in self-defense class, it's kind of theoretical. For us, it's real. So remember this, I'm accountable. So my team members, when they go out and the technique doesn't work, they come back to me. They'll say that did not work. And then you can't lie your way out of that. You can't be like, well, you're supposed to be better at conditioning and timing than that. They don't care how it didn't work. It didn't work. So what you're also seeing here, it's 26 years of evolution.
But how long? But obviously it takes practice and it takes learning. Like when you see Dale.
No, your point is we're conflating two things together. So think of survival as what it is. Survival. It's not a sport, right? But you got people on TikTok and everything else, showing people all kinds of sport combinations.
Of course,
yeah. What are you going to say? Don't show a sport combination. You can't learn from a video how to do sport combinations. Right. I look, there's no one making that comment. There's thousands of people showing how to choke people with a robe, and nobody's saying, you can't teach people how to choke people with a robe on video, in 10-second videos.
Right.
No one says that. But all of a sudden, I show you some ways to not die from a gun. You had no idea that this could help you stop the gun from firing at all or stop from firing again. Now, that can be very critical, very important information, and you don't need to study, put your finger out behind the trigger. You don't need to study, push the slides back. You don't need to study, stop the hammer, okay? You don't need to study any of that. If you knew it, it'd just help you. And guess what? People use that without talking to me, without looking at my videos. There have been people that stopped guns from firing since guns ever started, since guns ever existed, okay? So people are surviving without me. All my training does is help them survive more consistently.
Okay. And Dale, let me get to a few questions because I know you have to go, but just a couple of questions before you do. This one is, you know, getting around like the memes and the things that are like kind of jokes. And I know it seems like you take them well, but the first question from at Cody McCharles asks, what do you think about the people calling you out to fight? Like Tom DeBlass wanting you to fight one of his female purple belts. I don't know what this is referring to, but how do you deal with that? Like with the people calling you out and stuff like that?
To me, it's a sign of immaturity, irrational behavior. They obviously don't understand, you know, number one, they don't understand that this is a survival school.
Right.
We're not a wrestling school.
Yeah.
So it would be, I'm not understanding like what would be the point or the purpose of such a. Yeah. So if I rip this girl's eyes out, you're gonna be like, oh, Commander Brown.
Yeah.
I guess his techniques are better because her eyes are gone. That's just dumb. Why would you even want to do that?
Yeah. I mean, Dale.
People are complaining about a guy kicked the knee. He kicked the knee in MMA last.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about that.
They're like, oh my god, somebody else. That's just cheating. That's where we start. We start with going through the knee with a boot to the ground. Like, if that's cheating, that's all we do. And that's true, by the way. That's all we do is absolutely go around everything you would ever do in a sport. We do pretty much the opposite if your life's in danger. We only go with eyes, throat, groin. When we say groin, it's to destroy the groin and to go through the knee, not to the knee, but actually destroy the patella. We want to destroy things so that we don't have to refight that person because we're used to fighting people out of our weight class, people with weapons, and people that are multiple aggressors. You cannot play, I want to show you my skills at fighting with someone who's here to kill you. There's a big difference between killing and fighting. When you go into a sport, I don't care who you are, when you go there, you're not trying to die and you don't believe you're going to die and you don't believe the other guy's going to die. Although it could happen, you're pretty much sure it's not going to happen. If someone told you, let's go in here and only one of you is going to come out, 99.9% of all people are not going to go in there. That's because you're sane. You're not trying to go in there and die for some sport. If they told you you're going to go in here and your brain could disconnect from your spine, which has happened, right? You have spinal injuries. But that's not, it's so rare that people feel confident it's not going to happen to them. Yeah. They really don't believe they're going to die going to that sport.
Yeah.
But when you go outside in the dark and no weight class and weapons are there, and there's no referee, there's no police that are going to be able to help you.
Yeah.
You're talking about a whole different world. And that means death is on the table. Now, that's a special kind of person that's going to go out in that knowingly. Mostly when you are in those situations, what happened? You did not decide to be there. Someone put you there. You were minding your own business. You were with your family. You're with your wife, your girlfriend, your kids, when they decided to kill you. That is not the same thing as I'm ready to spar with you right now. So the two things are not related. And so for people that are thinking about fighting myself or other team members, you're not understanding that this is, so we have a threat continuum, escape, control, immobilize. If we can't escape from someone, we control them. If we can't control them, we immobilize them. The only way we immobilize them is eyes, throat, groin, leg, knees. So I don't know, how would we spar that?
Yeah.
I don't understand how we'd even do that. Like it would be unfair to say, it would be like telling an MMA person, listen, I like to spar you, but I don't want you using punches or elbows, or kicks.
No, Dale, I think
like tell me I can't go to eyes, throat, and knees. in the groin when I know that's how I survived. I survived gangs attacking me, multiple aggressors, because I did things to them that they could not recover from anytime soon, for sure. And if I would have been punching and kicking them, my attributes wouldn't matter. It wouldn't matter how clean my attributes were, because great attributes of a great fighter versus five non-good fighters, it's not going to go well nine times out of ten for the non-good fighter. You can, if as long as you trained for that specifically, for that attribute, right? But I'm going to train for that attribute, which is that kind of condition to actually strike eyes and throats while moving. It's very difficult. I can't even do it. And I still haven't been able to do it in a good, safe way that we can actually show it on YouTube or Instagram. Yeah. Because the one I did show you, I just showed the hands and you got to move around. I was showing the movement. And then I said, at the end of the video, I said, and now you're able to, because when you're moving a circle and they're actually attacking you, they're not going to be able to get to you more than one or one and a half people at a time. It's the way you're going to line them up as you're moving a circle, right? Okay. Now, what happened in real life, you don't have to go very far, because once you drop two or three of them, the other ones are not coming forward. They're not heroes. They don't want their eyes damaged, their knees damaged, their throat damaged. When they see that damage of their friends and cousins, they do not continue forward. It has to be significant, though. It can't be like, you know, you punched them good. You have to be seriously hurt for the other ones to be seriously dissuaded to believe there's not a good opportunity to come here and continue to attack you. But they will change their mind as long as you seriously hurt them. And when you're dealing with aggressors, you got to hurt them.
Yeah, but Dale, I feel the passion from you, and I hope that our viewers and listeners hear the passion from you. I think what people don't realize is how real you are, right? I think what happens is people see you in the memes. They see the memes that are made that like mix in jokes and mix in things. And then they don't realize, wait, this guy's coming from real life, like where he's teaching real life, life or death, like you're explaining.
Dude, this is part of my therapy.
Yeah.
this is part of my therapy. This has been helping me, man. And you know, even TikTok helped me, because they're, you know, cussing me out, calling me names, and I'm cussing them out, talking about their mothers. And then I find out they're 12 years old. And I'm like, oh,
get rid of that. Get rid of that, Dale. But so, Dale, I do.
Like that, young man.
Yeah, exactly. Dale, I do have
I'm just
to
getting
ask
better
you.
At the social media thing.
Yeah, no, it's a mess.
You can't call me that. You just called me that.
So at Rock Oz,
hey, one more thing I want your audience to know. My wife and others are actually doing most of social media because of my past inability to have discretion in my TikTok days.
Yeah.
So I had to stay off of there because I was saying things you're just not supposed to say, apparently.
Yeah, so
keep it very real. And you can't do that on social media. You gotta be very social media savvy. And otherwise, you know, you're gonna say things you shouldn't be saying. And I'm getting better.
On all the time, right?
I'm learning.
That's
and okay. They're not talking to me. So you guys, you're leaving these messages. They're not talking to me.
See?
My wife is fielding those questions.
People don't know that. But so at Rock Oz, he asked, do the meme, and you must see it, do the memes ever get under your skin? Because you are doing this for real, like you're doing this for legit, to save people, to help people. It's turned a bit funny. Does it get under your skin? Does it?
No, I think it's fun. So to me, it's funny, and I especially like it when people are non-believers. The greatest thing to me, you know, I'm better now, but when I was, you know, younger, I used to enjoy people that would say, you know, so I'm from Ann Arbor, so my speech pattern is very bright, Dumbo-like, and so these thugs. I call thug animals. These thug animals which could not respect me. They just couldn't. They were like, I can't listen to you. You talk like Bryant Gumbel. I have to be able to beat you up. We got to be able to beat you down. And then when they're bleeding all over the place, calling for the police, I just think it was so funny to look at their face of panic, you know, as I'm doing things to them and they're screaming. And I'm learning. I've learned not to enjoy that. So this is therapy, that to be able to let people you know, say inappropriate things or to try to be disrespectful. And for me, it's just, you know, it's funny because I know what's coming. And what's coming is one day we're going to be able to go through the tactics and you can try to resist them. There's nothing I teach that's resistible without extraordinary pain and suffering. And people have always tried since I started day one on the streets of Detroit, recruiting people from the streets of Detroit. And if you think they're tough, you think guys on the internet are tough. You see these guys that have never seen a day of freedom outside of prison for very long. And they came to see me personally because they heard I was on the east side teaching some foolishness. And they came in to teach me a lesson. And these guys, 6'7", 6'8", it was fun. I mean, but for me, I train all the time. So for me, yeah. I mean, imagine, it's not fair. If you do something all the time, you train, like when I say all the time, I don't mean like a sports person. I train. I mean, I could be like the guys who are psychotic with the training. So for me, training 12 hours a day would be normal. I was poor. I had nothing. And I had nowhere to be. So I just trained all day, all night. So it was just great fun, man, to just all day choking, striking every day, 7 days a week. No, I don't drink or smoke ever. I just never was into that. I was in training. So other people were drinking and smoking. I was training. And then I was looking for, I was never a bully, but I was looking for reasons to destroy them. So I enjoyed violent people bringing their violence to me. So that was my point, was this is my chance to really give back to society. And really, to be honest, going back to the beginning, what happened was I really thought I was going to die because I saw that there was so many violent criminals and there was no other remedy that I could find. So I would call 911. I had lots of police contact to, you know, try to coordinate to stop the shootings and some other stuff. And I had to become more proactive about change. And I became an active, proactive agent of change when a little girl was attacked in front of me. She was 14 years old. I did nothing to protect her. I did nothing because I was told not to protect anyone on the streets by a sergeant on the Detroit Police Department who became a friend of mine later.
But at this time, how old are you when this is happening?
25.
Okay.
And he was, and it was when I first started my organization. It was us. I had a dog, a rifle. At that time, I had a couple volunteers that were coming to training and getting apartments. And, you know, so I just had like maybe two or three people. I had some volunteer kids that would come and train with me on the weekends from Flint, Michigan, which is a very rough town. And they would come here from vocational school to Detroit and learn my system for credits in their college class or something. And at that time, they were volunteers. I had no money. So this little girl was being attacked by a mob of about 15 women, adult women, because one of their husbands wanted to have sex with a 14-year-old girl. And I didn't want to get in trouble. So I just kept calling 911 over and over again for 45 minutes while she's being attacked. And then when I took her to the police station with her mother the next day, they yelled at the mother and they yelled at the little girl who was, they sprayed Raid in her face and burned her face. These women did, as they were beating her, they sprayed Raid all over her face, gave her chemical burns. And I took the mother to the police station and the daughter the next day against their will. They really didn't believe the police would help them. I told them the police would help them. All they had to do is be, you know, good citizens and go to the police department. They'll help you. And I basically berated the mother and, kind of forced her to go to the police station by ridiculing her. And then we get to the police station. The police officer, African-American female, same age as her, about maybe about 40 years old. She wanted to yell at her and the good little girl, just literally yelling at them, humiliating them. And they were both traumatized, both, you know, crying from being humiliated. And I caused that because I tried to get them to go to the police department to make a police report about the attack. And I had I was a witness. I had the victim, excuse me, I had the criminals, perpetrators, names and social security numbers. They lived in the buildings. But since the attack was outside and I was told not to interfere, I didn't. Yeah. And I regret it forever that, you know, I let this girl get a chemical burn. I let a family get traumatized, and all I had to do was what I did from that day forward. And that is, I never let anyone or anything stop me from protecting people, including when I took a team of men to Hurricane Katrina. When I saw they weren't getting water that first weekend, my team members and I volunteered. I took, got my brand new 2005 Hummer in 2005. It still had this new car smell. When I went down there, I got dead body smell in the car. But I didn't care about that car. One that I care about the families we could be helping in Hurricane Katrina. and there was no money. I literally, when I say I had no money, I mean, I literally had no money when I got back. I had nothing. I spent all my own money. And then some clients gave me money to donate. They donated food supplies. They donated all kinds of things to help families as well. So we were able to go down the first weekend, literally the first weekend of the flooding in Hurricane Katrina. And that was probably one of the greatest days of my life, greatest times, is I formed an organization that was able to help rescue people in real life without needing money or funding. You know, nothing stopped us. And that's what I was really happy to see, that there's a group of people, there's men and women that will literally go out there, put their lives at risk for nothing. There's nothing we're going to get back. No one even, there's literally no credibility, no credit for it at all. We didn't care, though. What we cared about was going down there helping people. And it was a great thing, man, to just go and do what you can to help people during their worst time of need. And that's what it's all about at the end of the day.
Dale, this interview went in a extremely different direction than I thought, you know, and I greatly appreciate your time and stories and sharing this with us, because this is the Dale Brown that is real. This is not your 10-second little TikTok video clips. This is not the memes that people make of you. This is legit what you do. And I really hope that people will see that and feel that from you and then get a different understanding of who you are, right?
Because
tell you, I already had a lot of great deal of respect for you from what I researched and what I heard about you and what I knew.
Thank you.
Hearing this today is more than I ever thought. Like, I did not know any of this, and I appreciate this so much.
Hey, Dale, it's a dog, a gun, and a dream.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah, that's what it is, yeah.
Yeah.
It's an autobiography. I could see it happening now, buddy.
Dale, the movie is happening, and I just, you know, if you could get Keanu Reeves to play me in the movie, okay? For Prince, we can get someone. I don't even know who would play Prince, but, you know, just get good people for Fight in Sight when we're in the
absolutely,
movie.
Absolutely, okay? Absolutely.
Dale, get Lee or something, Dale.
Yeah. Hey, let you go, Dale, I do want to ask you just one thing, something maybe a little bit lighter. Tell us about the earpiece and the watch.
Yes.
There's been about a million comments about the earpiece and the watch.
Yeah.
What? It's a super watch. It's from the future. It's a miniature iPad watch from 2050.
But what is it?
Jacob's Rolex watch is that, Dale?
It controls the Batmobile? What is this?
It does. This is this watch is a 4G cell phone. It is actually completely waterproof. It's its own cell phone, has a video camera. It is the greatest watch ever. It does everything that you could ever imagine. It's quad band. It's futuristic to us in the United States, but quad bands have been overseas for many years. So look that up. Quad band watches. They're waterproof. This one right here is the actual phone itself. So it actually has its own SIM card. So it's an actual phone on your wrist. And it gives you all the data you would ever need and extra abilities. And this is from 1985.
Wow.
It's a bone conduction earpiece. But on the internet, they think it's from 1985. It's actually from the future. So it's reading. Oh, so this is good because people are asking, why do you have two on each side? This is reading, listening for vibrations on the bone of the around here. So your ears are clear. Same thing here. So this is what we wear in our organization. It reads off the bone. So you're actually hearing, what's being projected into the bones of your face. And that's so your ear channels stay clear. So you can actually hear what's around you for safety. So you can hear your music is in stereo. When you're talking, it's going through the bones of the face into the microphone. You got a microphone here too, but you're getting feedback from your bones of your face. And so even in rain, in wind, underwater, this still projects. You can still hear clearly, even in high winds. But what's most important is your ears are still clear. So even if you're listening to music, you're running, walking, biking, this bone conduction earpiece is our safest. So what we're doing is letting people know that this is what we use and this is what you should be using. So this will keep you safer than having something in your ear. You can still hear it from your ear channel, what's going on around you, so you know you're safe. And still hear your music in stereo and in high winds. You can still hear music, and they can still hear you with this microphone. So it's a great earpiece. Aftershocks, check it out.
Dale, listen, all those functions and can't even turn on the microwave.
It cannot. And it can't start the car yet.
No, yeah. Not yet.
Or garage door.
Dale.
It will, though, one day.
Yeah. The next patch, it will do that, Dale. Dale, thank you so much for coming on. Before we let you go, is there anything that you wanted to say to the fans, viewers, and listeners, anyone that you wanted to give a shout out to?
Yes, to the CAT team, Canadian Assault Team. Remember you guys. There was a bunch of Canadians that worked here. They called themselves the CAT team. That's not my idea. They called themselves the Canadian Assault Team. And these guys fought all over the region, just against only extremely violent people. Delta 7, he's one of the people that are survivors. Six of us got shot. One female, five men. All of our team members are alive. That's because we stabilized our wounded, transport to level one trauma hospitals. In other words, if you don't have trauma aid training in your training, then you're not really prepared for real life situations where people are going to stab you and shoot you. And so, again, it's more a testament to our training. We're all alive because of our training. So the reality is, you know, please do research, look us up, go online, Google research, Detroit Threat Management Center. Detroit Urban Survival Training is the school that's specifically for growth nationally, internationally. And we are not private police. We are an organization that's a school first, a community service organization second, and we're self-funded by making rich people richer by protecting the people that are at risk the most. So that's a system. That's why I made it self-sustainable and why we don't need government funding or anything else to survive and continue to grow.
It's amazing what you do, Dale. Like I said at the beginning of the podcast, this is our 47th episode. Dale, you are one of the most exciting guests people were waiting to hear from, to see. We appreciate your time so much. You've started off our 2022 incredibly, and we wish you all the best. We will continue to watch your stuff. We will continue to spread the good news about the hard work and the brave work that you do. Thank you so much. I know that the people watching this are going to be so shocked to hear all this stuff. We appreciate you, Dale. All the best to you in 2022 and beyond, and we'll be first in line at the movie.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
All right. Take care, Dale. All the best.
Okay, guys. See you. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks for the opportunity.
Bye-bye.
Wow.
Oh, man. Prince.
Commander Dale Brown.
Prince, not at all what I thought, man.
Really? Right?
What were you expecting? I was expecting, like, I don't know. I was expecting him just to be very... I don't know. I thought he was going to be more, I guess, light. Like, I didn't know that he did this stuff. Like, I didn't know that he's, like, legit doing some serious, serious safety threat management stuff. Like, I knew that he was teaching self-defense. I knew that it was a legit mm-hmm. school. I knew that he was out there protecting communities, but not to the degree that he's talking about.
Oh, like, yeah, you know, yeah, it's definitely the passion, right? And I mean, a lot of the things that he was talking about, it's all driven by the sense of community, sense of making a positive change. That you could tell in his voice, he's all passionate about it. Like, he was so driven. And so, I mean, hopefully our viewers or listeners are listening to this and be like, wow, so we actually got to see that side of Dale Brown, right?
And I know it went long, like, this podcast is going to be really long for us, but what are you going to do, man? Like, I'm not going to stop him from talking. I mean, I already felt like I broke in a few too many times because I just didn't want to go crazy. Like, I knew he had a set amount of time, but I hope you guys enjoy it, man. I mean, Prince, the jokes and the stuff that I had, you know, lined up were like the jokey type questions. It just didn't mm-hmm. fit. It didn't fit with the interview. And like, where people were saying, and again, I'll get to it now because he's gone, but like, oh, these tactics only work in certain scenarios. They're not going to work in real life. You can't learn to self-defense like this. Why do you delete all the negative comments? What's some of the other things? You should be a character in Mortal Kombat. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like, this is the stuff we were getting.
Yep.
But like, as you listen to him and as you see and hear what legit he is doing, it's like, none of this shit is respectful or in any way appropriate to ask him. Like, this guy is living this in real life. Like, you can make all the memes and stuff you want. Like, and that's, I guess, what he's kind of saying, right? Like, it's therapy for him just to see the jokes and stuff, but he knows what he's doing and he knows in the conviction of what he's standing for.
Yeah, and listen, people have to watch the podcast. They have to watch the podcast and listen to his side of the story. And you know what, guys? We got to give a big shout out to Timmy B, because booking this man was, can I tell you,
I'm so glad that he came.
I don't know how you did it, Timmy. You know what? At this point, we, you know what? Sky's the limit. We're going to have Biden come in here next week. Trudeau, you name it. We got them all.
So let's say who our guest is for next week.
All right.
I mean, Dale Brown starts off the year for us. That is incredible. Mm-hmm. But next week, Prince?
Street Beef's very own. Fair play!
So we spoke about Street Beefs. You know what Street Beefs is. You've seen it on YouTube. If you haven't and you want to prep for next week, search Street Beefs on YouTube. It's like an underground fight league or something. Like, I don't even know how to explain it. But one of the main fighters that you will see on Street Beefs is named Fair Play. If you don't recognize the name, you'll recognize his look. He's the guy that wears the black dress pants, the white dress shirt, and the black suspenders.
Yep.
So that is Fair Play. He's like one of their main fighters. He fights all the time. He will be on the podcast next week. And coincidentally, he just announced he's having his first ever MMA fight in about a month's time, in March something. He'll be fighting his first ever MMA for an actual promotion, not on Street Beefs. So
perfect timing. Wow.
Crazy, man. Crazy. So we are very excited to see him. Prince, I do want to give a huge shout out, of course, to our sponsors, Midday Squares. So guys, if you are not already eating these, this is New Year's. You got to get fit. You got to get in shape. MiddaySquares.com. Use the code FIGHTINSIGHT15 to save 15% off your first order. The stuff is great. It's going to help you get in shape. Go purchase that. It helps support the show, so we appreciate it. Prince, I know we're long. Do we just keep going?
Yeah, let's just keep going.
Yeah?
Let's do it.
Do you want to just talk about the one topic then? You want to just talk about Ariel versus Danis?
Yeah, let's go with that. Let's talk about this Melrose Place that just transpired. 2022.
So, all right, let's talk about Ariel Helwani versus Dylan Danis. Mm-hmm. Here's the tweet that he posted. This is Ariel Helwani's posting the tweet. It says, guys, if you think life sucks right now, just think you could have begged for 3 years to fight an O&O YouTuber and 3 years later still not be popular enough or good enough to even be considered a worthy opponent for him. Imagine that. In other words, you could be Dylan Danis.
Wow, shots fired man down. Dale Brown could, we could teach us, Prince, a couple of things about dodging bullets. Yep.
So we're talking about Ariel Helwani, the reporter. He's an MMA analyst, an MMA commentator, reporter.
Yep.
And he's taking shots at Dylan Danis, who is a jiu-jitsu practitioner. He is an MMA fighter. I think he's 3-0. Under Bellator.
Yep.
He's known for having a bit of an attitude, problems, blah, blah, blah. But what is going on in the story? I know you researched this a little bit. Like, what's the deal here?
So this is how it all broke down. So basically, Ariel started siding with Jake Paul, and everyone's seen the list of demands that Jake Paul recently posted about UFC, about increased fighter pay, healthcare services. And this was targeted towards Dana White.
Yeah.
A part of it was also Jake Paul was willing to retire off of boxing and sign a deal to fight Jorge Masvidal, just as long as Dana White, agrees to these terms. And, Ariel comes in and tweets in and say, bigger dub. So he's like, wow, that's crazy. He's putting this out there. Jake Paul's wanting these demands. That's cool, right?
Wait, Ariel is saying bigger dub?
Bigger dub. So it's like a big win. That's basically
what it is. So Ariel is taking Jake Paul's side.
That's it. And okay. So now Dylan sees all this and is like, you know what, Ariel, you're a, I don't want to say it on the podcast. You're a big
say it.
B. Okay. Right? Says it. And this is where Ariel just unleashes the Kraken. And there's a barrage of tweets that he unleashed after that. So that first tweet that he just showed right now was the first response Ariel made towards Dylan. And yeah, from there, it's just been back and actually, it's more Ariel's been the one taking most of the shots. It's crazy.
Okay, so that's what I saw though. So like, okay, so hold on. So Dylan Danis essentially calls Ariel a bitch for taking Jake Paul's side against Dana White and the UFC.
Yes.
Which there is a history there between Dana and Ariel, right? Didn't Ariel get kicked out of UFC and like not allowed to come back, blah, 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 right?
Mm-hmm. He's been banned from the UFC land.
Right.
Yeah, like that.
So now Ariel sides with Jake Paul in these ridiculous demands, mind you. Mm-hmm. Like, in my opinion, we can get into that. We were going to talk about Jake Paul versus Dana White today, but we're not going to have time. So we'll get to that next week. I mean, the demands were ridiculous. It's all a bunch of baloney, right? Dana White doesn't have to do shit that some random guy just calls out.
Yep.
But so then Ariel starts going hard on Dylan Danis.
Oh, do you want me to read the
tweet? Read a few more. Yeah.
Hey, guys, follow me real quick and I'll follow you back and pay you 1K. FFS. Get a grip, Dylan, who acts like this. Hey guys, if I lose to Jake, I'll retire. Retire from what? Social media, you already don't fight. Yeesh. 3-2-1 before OLDD Texas. Me, hey bro, why don't you like me? Like I thought we were cool, bro. Can't wait for the witty tweet reply. And then he'll call for a truce, then ask me to RT his tweets every 2 seconds. What a pleasure. Yep, it's...
Okay, it's, hold on. I don't know, man. Okay. What we haven't talked about this before, so I don't know, but what is your take on this? Like, whose side are you on? Are you okay with Ariel tweeting like this?
Well, you know what? I mean, okay, to tell you the truth, that first tweet that you showed, I'm like, there's got to be a reason why he's dropped this. He didn't just, you know, decided to walk in 2022, picking violence, right? Smashing people left, right, and center. Well, I mean, Dylan was the one who called him out first, and now Ariel's firing back, but he's firing back nonstop. Like, I mean,
but calling someone out by going, hey, you're a bitch or whatever. It's not crazy. But are you okay with Ariel going off?
Yeah, of course. Like if anyone, you know, instigates anything, and plus he's a very, like, Ariel's a smart guy. Like he's not just going to sit there and like, okay, I'm just going to take it. No, I agree with all of Ariel's tweets, but man, like to the degree that he's done it, my gosh, I think this guy just like ended the man's career, right? Like,
I'm going to say no, man. I'm going to say no. Bullshit. I don't think, first of all, Ariel is a member of the media, right? What I can't wait to do is talk to a fighter or something about this, because fighters give up their time, right? Their personal information, their just give up their time, okay? Their valuable time to talk with reporters, to talk with us, right? Like anybody that comes on this podcast, holy crap, I appreciate your time so much, right? Because you don't have to do this. There's nothing in this for you, okay? We don't pay people nothing, right?
Free.
So these people give up their time, and now Ariel is just going to blast you like this and just go off based on what seems to be not that much of a provocation. Like he's just going to like just start smashing into this guy like this. And because Ariel does have a lot of followers and stuff like that, this stuff is getting blasted out everywhere. Everybody has seen or heard this.
Yeah.
I don't think it's really appropriate if you're a member of the media to be smashing an athlete. And then why would other athletes now go on Ariel's show? Because what about the next time I disagree with you and I say something, you're just going to start smashing me and like belittling me in public? Like that's, I don't know, well, man.
Well, Ariel is almost like his own entity now. Like, I mean,
but you're not. That's but this is what I mean. You're not fucking bigger than the next outlet that fires you. You know what I mean? Like, people think that they're so much bigger than what they really are. Like, the guy has to have some respect at some point. I get it. You can say one or two things, but I don't know, man.
Okay, but listen. Like, okay, so say you're Ariel. Dylan sends this tweet, and you don't respond. What do you think the people are going to think of you and your credibility?
I'm not saying you can't respond once, maybe, but to go off like he does and to be so disrespectful. And wait a second, the guy is siding with Jake Paul's stupid demands. Like the demands ultimately are ridiculous. And of course, Dana White or some organization isn't going to be bullied by one guy saying shit. Like, it just... And obviously, Ariel has a negative relationship with Dana White anyway. So if he's going to side with anyone, he's going to side with this thing because he knows it gets him tweets and gets him views too. Yeah. So like, he's doing it selfishly anyways. Ariel doesn't give a crap about, you know what I mean? Like, ultimately, like, what is going on, I'm sure. Maybe he does, but it just, I don't know.
I'm just surprised it was Dylan was the first person to say anything. I wonder why, how come no one else from that organization jumped in, right?
Wait, what? If
like, I was wondering, like, I mean, Dylan was the first one to say anything about what Ariel tweeted. Like, just, it's a big dub, right? So, like, why wasn't anybody from the UFC side defending Dana?
Look, we know that there are a lot of fighters that we have spoken to that say that they are not... that they feel very well taken care of, right? Financially wise or otherwise, they say that they are doing well. I get that there's a bunch of people that say they're not, and we could have that argument forever. But I don't know, man. I do believe that if it was so bad that they couldn't be where they are, like if you were so vastly like mistreating people or like in any company, right? Like if you were mistreating your employees, HR way or pay wise or whatever, you wouldn't exist. Like you're not in slave labor here. I don't know, man. I don't know. We've talked to enough people that say that they are happy. That makes me believe it's not 1,000,000% one way.
Yeah. Well,
the problem is that Dylan Danis is a guy that is quite hated. So it was an easy guy to pick on.
Yeah, and the ammo that Ariel had for this person, my gosh, it's yeesh, like this.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm not keen on how Ariel did that. I know that, like, for us, like, not that we are in the stratosphere of Ariel Helwani, but I would never just go off and start bashing some athlete like that, like from Fight Insight, like. Because we're meant to be somewhat impartial. Of course, we're going to cheer for the people that have come on our podcast or we cheer for the people that we like because we're human. But I wouldn't go off and like smash someone because I also know where we are. Or like, don't you think like at some point you might want to have that guy on your show? Like, what if Dylan Danis starts to freaking do amazing in his fight career and becomes a champion? Ariel's just going to be like, well, screw that. I burned that bridge.
Yeah, well, I mean... Fight Insight, a walking Switzerland. That's what we are, right? We're just right in the
I should have had a Switzerland flag to
wave. That's it, right? Crazy.
I don't know. Crazy. I don't know. I think it's crazy that he would do that. I don't know. I just don't like it. I think it's a bunch of crap.
But I mean, it's a great way to start the new year, right? I mean, you know.
And look, we were going to talk about Jake Paul. We're going to talk about the knockout, which we still haven't talked about because we've been so busy. We were going to talk about the bad pay-per-view sales. We were going to talk about the feud with Dana White over fighter pay. And we were going to talk about recently, just today, he talked about cocaine versus steroid testing and all that stuff. So we will save that for next week, Prince, and we'll get into it. So at least we have our topics for next week. Friend of the podcast update. 2 days after we released the podcast, Prince, last week with Gita Marie, she signs a fight. She is fighting a man on February 5th. So, I mean, within a month's time, she will be fighting. And this is what she called for on our podcast. We want to believe that we had some tiny hand in helping this happen. But of course, a huge, huge good luck goes out to our friend Gita Marie.
Gigi, the man eater, Figueroa. Man, I love the last name. You know what? Gigi, I hope you take this one. I hope you're training hard, and I hope this is a dub. Right. I honestly, you know what? Got to get cocky with it, Tim. It was our sure. podcast that, you know, got this bad boy going. So
yeah. No, and you
podcast, know, watch it.
Yeah. If you have not watched last podcast, give it a go. It's funny. The first comment on our YouTube was, I can't watch this.
I know.
And it was because of the topic and whatever, and we get it. But that's why we wanted to have her on, because we thought it was a polarizing topic that we think, and I think it came out really well. So if you haven't watched that podcast, do give it a try. I think it was a very interesting one. I would say just as interesting as today's podcast in hearing all the stuff that Dale says.
Right? Yep, like, absolutely. And Gigi was so well-spoken. She was ready. She was prepared. Yeah, you guys got to catch this one, but wait until you see this bad boy. This one right here, Commander Dale Brown, a dog, a gun, and a dream.
Yeah, man. Crazy, Prince. Like, what a way to start off the year, my friend. Again, not the way I thought this podcast was going to go at all. I even had prepared
the Nerf gun. Beautiful
gun to have Dale virtually disarm me. But I'll tell you, Prince, the podcast went so different, man. Look, we are at an hour and 20 minutes, so this is a podcast much longer than any normal. I got to watch this back, see if I'm going to edit anything out of it. But Prince, I had a great time with you, buddy.
Hey, Tim, it was a thank you again. Amazing, amazing work. This is, guys, you got to thank Tim. Timmy B was the one who squeezed this one out of, I don't know where you got this one from. Like,
this was crazy, man. This was a crazy opportunity. I hope people enjoy it. Man, he was so much more passionate and real than I thought. Guys, let us know what you think about the podcast in the comments below. Go buy some midday squares to eat while you watch it. I do want to give a shout out, Prince, to Noom. They sent us a bunch of stuff, man. I was drinking it during the podcast today. So if you've seen this at stores, Noom, they're like those tablets that you put in your water. They sent us some stuff to enjoy for our podcast. Man, thank you so much to Noom. We will put their information on the podcast as well. Or sorry, in the show notes as well. But thank you to them for some great stuff. Prince, until next week, my friend.
Until next week, buddy. You take care.
Have a good one, buddy. Street Beefs. Go watch it.